Texas Parks and Wildlife Podcast, providing an exclusive look into efforts to conserve the wild things and wild places in Texas.
I'm Lydia Saldana with Texas Parks and Wildlife Foundation, and we're here at the Pajarita Ranch in Wilson County, southeast of San Antonio, where we've had an absolutely amazing morning with City Kids Adventures. I've got a few guests here with me, and let's start with...
I'm Leon McNeil with City Kids Adventures, and it was an amazing morning this morning.
I'm Freda Seligson, and I agree, it was amazing. And my wife and I own the ranch, and known Leon and the kids in the program for years and years, and we're happy to be able to share it.
And I'm Jamie Killian with Texas Parks and Wildlife. I'm the county biologist, and I work with Freda Seligson and was lucky enough to be invited out.
And Leon, I understand that this is the first of this type of adventure that your kids have been involved in. What are we doing here this morning?
Correct. Well, basically, it's a hog hunt, and a gentleman by the name of Bubba Allen has some amazing hog dogs, and we approached with the idea of doing a hog hunt. I thought it might be a great opportunity for our kids to get out and experience a new adventure, and it was high adrenaline. Bubba has some really, really good dogs, and they worked really, really well, and it wasn't quite what people thought it was going to be, and the kids were really anxious, but it soon calmed down. It's 0 to 100, good
yeah.
stuff.
Well, we had, what, 6 kids here, and we took 8 pigs. That's a good ratio. Tell us a little bit about these kids. Who are they?
Basically, these are our older kids. They're in high school, and they've all been on a program since the 6th grade, and this was kind of a reward for them. This was a little more maturity involved in a hunt like this to make sure that everyone's safe, and so we knew that these kids could handle it, and they did really well. And we had three girls and 3 boys, and they did a really nice job. And Bubba, again, I can't compliment him enough about how well his dogs worked, because, you know, basically it kept everyone safe in terms of what we were doing.
What was your impression of the kids, Freda?
Mature, poised. They showed no trepidation. I mean, it's, you have dogs, you have hogs, you have a knife, but they didn't pause. They knew what they were supposed to do. They're excited, and I mean, extremely courteous. Just top-notch kids.
So, and Jamie, maybe we could just ask you, you know, why this was not only an opportunity for the kids to have a hunting adventure, but it's also a conservation action as well. Talk to us a little bit about the feral hog issue here in Texas.
Well, feral hogs are exactly what you said. They're feral, so they are domestic animals that have gone back to a wild state or wild nature, and they do this very quickly. And feral hogs are very intelligent, and they're very adaptable, so they have thrived across the United States and in Texas, and they do over $50 million a year of damage alone in Texas.
That's agricultural damage.
Agricultural damage, just agricultural damage, yes.
So that's not necessarily counting the damage done just on a ranch like yours.
No, it's hard to quantify what they do when you're not in row crop agriculture, which I'm not. But I do a lot of habitat restoration projects through Parks and Wildlife, NRCS office, and areas where we're trying to reestablish native grasses. They'll come root through there and tear it all up. Even things in your hay fields, you know, trying to drive equipment through your hay fields when you're cutting hay. You know, lots of people won't even bring equipment anymore because they're so, it's like a bomb field, and it takes a toll on all the equipment. So that's another economic impact, not necessarily tied to row crop, though. They're in San Antonio, they're going into the cemeteries, damaging, you know, perpetual care, tearing up these cemeteries. So they really are, you know, they're non-native invasive species that, you know, is taking parts of the state over.
Okay. And can you talk a little bit, Jamie, about just the how quickly they reproduce, how much of a problem it is? It isn't like you do one hunt like this and you're done.
Right. So hunting alone doesn't have a population impact on feral hogs. Hunting and trapping combined don't have a population impact. So we are not keeping up with their reproductive rate. And in good habitat, like this property, when you've had good rainfall, they can reproduce 2 to 3 times a year. And a good sow can have, she averages 8 to 10 piglets, but they can have as many as 18 piglets in a litter.
So I heard a biologist once a joke that, you know, they have 8 to 10, but then 12 survive.
Yes.
it's
funny, but it's not.
Yeah, it's funny, but it's not. Now, Leah, the kids involved today, I mean, when you go out and do a hunt on this, and I had the opportunity to talk with several of them just about their experience, not just today, but just in general. What are you trying to get across to them?
Basically, we're trying to remove the thought process of inner city environment, asphalt and concrete. We take them out to the natural world, and they get to see natural things. Freitas identified a lot of things that I never even knew existed in terms of the names of plants and bird species. And so it was it's more educational for the kids. It's really not about the hunt. It's about the experience. And so anytime we go out and we have an adventure, it's always about the experience, because the kids come from asphalt and concrete. They don't understand the natural world. And to be able to be a part of that, and Freitas to be able to share his ranch, and the kids to be able to leave that environment and come to another environment, now they can have an opportunity to make some decisions about, you know, things that are pretty, pretty pure in life.
Well, I was talking to Janae about right after when y'all were, when you gutted the pig the first time. And I just wanted to ask her, because I hadn't experienced, it's been a long time since I've had that experience. And I wanted to ask her, and I did ask her, I said, what was that like the first time you experienced it? What did you think about that? And I expected a teenage response of, oh, it was gross, or that was awful. And her response was, it was amazing. She said, you don't learn this kind of stuff in school. And it really was amazing. And I think I just about interrupted you. You were about to say something before I started that.
Oh, I was just thinking about, yeah, so many of us take it for granted. Like, my kids grew up out here. And, you know, what works with city kids is they're bringing these kids here, but we're all with them. It's not just Leon. It's, you know, we have a biologist. We have, you know, we have professional hunting guides. We have, you know, and we all do it together. So that's, you have a chance to interact with the kids, and they'll come, and we have a tree nursery, and they'll work in our nursery, but we're working right next to them. So that's what makes it work.
Exactly. We firmly believe it takes a village to make sure the kids have all the experiences they need. And without people like Freitas and the biologists and countless sponsors throughout, you know, our program and over the years, there's no way we could do what we do. And they make it all possible, because at the end of the day, we just happen to be a little vehicle that they can just kind of ride on and catch a ride on. But everyone else that comes together make this possible for these kids to have experiences, because they don't get in inner city, and that's what we're trying to change.
Now, Jamie, I know we had a conversation last week about this whole experience. What's your take on today?
I did not grow up hunting myself, and so I think it's hard to explain to a person that doesn't see it that hunting actually makes you appreciate and value life more. And so seeing these kids and seeing them get that, it does more for me than I feel selfish. I feel like I get more out of this than they do. And they really appreciate things and have a better value. They are mature, and this helps mature them. And seeing them get that opportunity, and that there's people that care and open their property up and take their time to take kids out, that's fun to be involved with. So I never work a day in my life, I can say.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah. If you like what you do, you never have to go to work.
And Freitas, you're all in. I mean,
I'm all in seeing you
interact with the kids, you know, pointing out the different plants. I mean, tell us a little bit about some of the plants we saw today.
We saw horse mint, which is it's actually also called bee balm, but it has a square stem.
Now, that's what we smelled when we were going across. Is that what, when I commented, yeah. I said, what
yes.
is that smell?
Yes.
But
that's the smell.
And, you know, there's the mint family is the only family with a square stem. So for the kids, that's an opportunity to engage them and to educate them. But that's tactile, so they're feeling it. We saw painted bunting,
which was
beautiful. We saw we foraged. We had dewberries and agarita berries. You know, just little opportunities for them. Not everything comes from the HEB,
yeah, exactly.
Right? So it's fun. I like it.
And chomping through black brush and white brush, they got to feel the difference.
And there's just something about just getting dirty, right?
Yes.
And looking at Leon, who's covered with mud.
he did get the most enthusiastic award.
What happened on that?
Well, it was got a little bit of rambunctious in there, and We had a hog bait in the creek, and he was on the other side of the creek, and it was kind of thick with dewberry vines and all things involved. And he let the catch dog go, and we saw the catch dog go across the creek, and the dogs were really standing off, and they were falling down in the creek. And I thought, wow. So the hog broke and ran, but he ran on the other side of the creek, and he ended up coming right back towards it. He wasn't a really, really big hog, but he was big enough to get everybody on edge. And I was trying to move out of the way and took a misstep back and ended up in the creek.
You panicked.
Yeah, that's
the teacher panicked.
Yeah. Well, and that's a teachable moment too,
sure,
right?
Exactly, sure. Exactly. But we recovered, and I ended up, the hog, that particular hog got away, but we caught another one, and a lot bigger one. The second time around, so it was good. Yeah.
Well, you made the comment about HEB, and I was talking to Erica because she took the last pig that we took today, and I was just talking to her about that experience, what that was like, and then just what it means to her to take, because they're going to take meat home to their families, and she talked about how that meaningful that is to her, that she feels like she's contributing to her family. And then she also talked about that, you know, a lot of her classmates, they go to HEB, and not singling HEB out, just go to a grocery store, and they see these nice little neat packages of meat, and she said people don't realize what goes into it. She says, and I do, and I understand it, and
yeah,
I appreciate it.
We talk about, and I read all these books about nature deficit. You know, the average kid now spends 4 to 6 minutes outside. That's literally how long it takes from your parked car to get into the HEB and then back out. And that's their exposure to nature. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we need to change the narrative.
Why do you think that's important?
Oh, wow. Well, you have to have an appreciation for your open spaces. And, you know, you can't, if you live in a city, and if you look at the demographics and numbers of people, you know, the cities are where the population are. But all of the open spaces are, you know, that's where our water is being filtered. That's, you know, where our wildlife are living and thriving. And so how do you bridge that gap? And it's vital for kids to understand, you know, I've had kids out here from St. PJ's which is a home for kids in San Antonio. They've never seen a tomato growing, right? So we can't close the gates. We have to open them. So, because that's the future voter, but those are also our stewards who are going to support open land.
Right,
and realize how vital they are to the whole ecosystem, to the population, to our well-being, everything.
Yeah. And what he's touched on is vitally important. And in our program, we like to refer to it like this. If they don't have a point of reference to compare to, they can't make an informed decision. So they live in the inner city all their lives. That's what they know. That's what they understand. So contrarily, they think that that's the way the world is until you get them out in the natural world. And now they have a point of reference to where they can compare to. Then they can make decisions and open their minds about the things that they want to do. And it's vitally important. And what Freitas is doing and a lot of our landowners allowing us to bring inner city kids out and be a part of that, it helps change the thought process. It helps change a culture, and it's important.
You've been doing this for how long with these kids?
23 years.
Okay. Yeah. So this is a life calling for you.
It's a way of life. And like we'll say all the time, I never work a day in my life. And they ask me if I ever have time for myself, my wife and I, and this is our time for ourselves, and we love it. And to see everyone involved and all the people that come together to give kids their experience to learn and be informed is just amazing for us. It's mind-numbing.
Now, so you said you've been doing it for 22, 23 years. What have you noticed? I know you're in touch with a lot of these kids as they've grown up, they've gone on to college. How have these experiences affected their lives?
It's made them understand the value of the natural world. We were going down south just the day before yesterday, and we saw one of our kids and the car truck pull up beside us, and we're like, who is that? Why is this guy pulling up beside us like that? And he's looking over, he's got his little baby boy in the front seat, and he's 4 years old, and he tells us he's going down to go down to Port Aransas and go fishing. And I'm like, wow. And so we're gonna have Camp Hawkeye, and obviously he's gonna come back. And again, this particular year, we're gonna have a reunion, and we're gonna get a lot of our older kids to come back, because once they get it, they understand the value. And one of the things that resonated with me that he mentioned in the conversation was, like you always say, coach, in the program, hard work has many rewards. And here's a guy that's come back, and he's a positive contributor to our society now. and that's all we could ever ask for. You know, it's not a taker mentality. It's just a positive, and all this is attributed to the natural world and being able to understand that there are different things than just asphalt and concrete.
That's awesome.
It's important.
Now, Jamie, I know you work with lots of landowners in your job. Can you talk a little bit about the role of private landowners in conservation?
They own it. I mean, 96% of Texas is privately owned. And so a comment I hear a lot when I talk to people is, well, that animal or that plant is fine, but I don't want it on my place. And we can't all have that attitude. The state is privately owned, and so it's, as Freddie said, we've got to open our gates. We need these stewards, we need these people. And kind of to backtrack on some of the other comments, I don't think that it's critically important when I talk to landowners. I tell them you don't need to know what every single plant is on your property. You don't need to know the name of all these things. What you need to know is that diversity is important. There is a role. I can't even tell you the importance of every single plant or animal out there, but once it's gone, it's gone. And these things give us our clean water, clean air. If the land is not healthy, we can't be healthy either. And with Mr. Leon's program, these kids are getting it. They're seeing it go full circle and put food on the table, and they're understanding. And I really like the longevity that he puts into the kids. It's not take them hunting one time. He's showing them a process, and then they get to mentor, and that's really impressive. That's really impressive.
It was also neat to talk with you earlier, Freitas, about the quail that you're mm-hmm. starting to hear again. Mm-hmm. Talk to me a little bit about that and about the grassland restoration program and some of these other programs that you're involved in that are helping to make that happen.
So when Josie and I bought the ranch, you know, we were more or less dedicated towards habitat restoration. That's something I've always loved to do. It's expensive to take land that was overgrazed, abused, full of invasive species, and turn it back as best as possible to what Mother Nature intended. There are programs, though, and you know, once again, if you open your gate, there's a wealth of knowledge if you're willing to listen through NRCS, Parks and Wildlife. So we've taken areas that we've identified to do habitat restoration projects, where we're bringing in native grass seeds, reestablishing native grass, thinning the woody species, creating open habitat that's for the wildlife, but even selfishly from a livestock operator standpoint, it makes it easier to gather your cattle when there's not as much brush. But all that designed with conservation in mind and in partnership. And so there are cost share programs. And once going back to where the votes are, right, in the urban environment, why should we be paying Freitas 50% to do this? Well, if you don't show them and bring them out here, you know, those programs will dry up, but they're critically important for the landowner to do, you know, we always say in Texas, you know, just leave us alone, tell us what to do, and we'll do it. You know, so tell me what the right thing is to do, and I'll go do it. But it helps to then also have some dollars behind it. And conservation programs, you know, every 2 years, a lot of them seem to be on the cutting board. You know, why are we doing this? Why do we have ag valuation? You know, why are we doing this? Well, the minute you take that away, you'll see land fragmentation like you've never dreamed of. So I work with the government entities. I mean, people are a lot smarter than I am. And we, you know, so they show me what to do. They give me the tools, and then I go do it. And it's that kind of a partnership that enables these, you know, best management practices to happen. And now, yeah, we were talking about quail. Leon's been here. I get to hunt quail where there weren't any quail before when we bought the land. Now it takes time. It's a succession. You can't just instantaneously create the habitat. Good habitat takes a long time to establish, but it's really rewarding if you're willing to invest the time. And you know, fortunately, Josie and I are kind of in lockstep on that one. So she allows me to do things, and I work with, you know, wonderful people.
Well, y'all live in San Antonio. We're close to San Antonio. And San Antonio, you know, I grew up in San Antonio. And one of the things that's interesting to me in the last 30 years is to observe the difference and the heightened environmental consciousness of San Antonio mm-hmm. with the amount of money that has been, the voters have voted to mm-hmm. tax themselves mm-hmm. for land conservation, because of the water issue.
Sure.
You want to speak to that a little bit? Because I think a lot of people don't necessarily understand. We have a tax
so we can go buy critical habitat over in the recharge zone of the Edwards. We have our main source of water in San Antonio, as you know, is the Edwards Aquifer. It's an amazing karst aquifer. You know, 1 inch rain in the right spot fills it up 5 feet. It's amazing. But so the city has a program where we go, we lock them, whether it's using conservation easements, outright purchase, whatever, to maintain the open spaces in these critical areas. And even in San Antonio proper, you know, the San Antonio River Improvement Project, which is, you know, the voters voted basically $125 million. Went to that project, and so everyone's vested in that project. And what in that project, we took a river and recreated a natural river. You know, it was a sterile and devoid of any environmental or any habitat. It was horrible. And now it's a restored river, and
it's
people are recreating
story.
On it. They're kayaking. We have fish. You can go fishing again. But the voters are, I remind people every day, hey, we saw the value of this. It's not just the county and the city and the government, you all did it. So, and that's in public-private partnerships, kind of like this kind of an arrangement board here, which is, you know, you have the Parks and Wildlife, you have a private nonprofit, you have a landowner, you know, you got to do partnerships are the only way we're going to be able to preserve what's important and spread the message, in my opinion.
Well, it'd be hard to top the adventure that we had today. do you have anything else scheduled coming up this year here?
Not here. We just finished up a fun fish over at other ranch, Kinsabe. That was amazing. Got some weather but we typically do one or two activities a year with Freitas and his family, and so it's wonderful that they open their doors and allow us to be out here.
Well, thank you all very much for being with us today. Leon, thank you for inviting us to be here. This has been the most amazing adventure I think that I've ever had. And as I said, after we saw the painted bunny, that now this day is absolutely perfect. So Freitas, thank you for inviting us out here.
No, it's a pleasure.
And Jamie, thanks for spending your Sunday morning with us.
Yeah.
No problem.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank all you guys for making this possible. And Bubba, thank Bubba too. Yeah.
Thank you, Bubba.
We're amazing.
Thanks.
Amazing.
Texas Parks and Wildlife Podcast is brought to you by Texas Parks and Wildlife Foundation, supporting high-impact conservation projects across the state. Find out how you can help at tpwf.org.